A reading from the second book of Samuel. The Lord spoke to Nathan and said, "Go, tell my servant David, when your time comes and you rest with your ancestors, I will raise up your heir after you, sprung from your loins, and I will make his kingdom firm. It is he who shall build a house for my name, and I will make his royal throne firm forever. I will be a father to him, and he shall be a son to me. Your house and your kingdom shall endure forever before me. Your throne shall stand firm forever." The word of the Lord. A reading from the letter of St. Paul to the Romans. Brothers and sisters, it was not through the law that the promise was made to Abraham and his descendants that he would inherit the world, but through the righteousness that comes from faith. For this reason, it depends on faith, so that it may be a gift and the promise may be guaranteed to all his descendants, not to those who only adhere to the law, but to those who follow the faith of Abraham, who is the father of all. As it is written, "I have made you father of many nations." He is our father in the sight of God, in whom he believed, who gives life to the dead and calls into being what does not exist. He believed, hoping against hope, that he would become the father of many nations, according to what was said, thus shall your descendants be. That is why it was credited to him as righteousness. The word of the Lord.
Dominus vobiscum.
Et cum spiritu tuo.
Lectio Sancti Evangelii secundum Matteum.
Gloria tibi, Domine.
Jacob was the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary. Of her was born Jesus, who is called the Christ. Now this is how the birth of Jesus Christ came about. When his mother Mary was betrothed to Joseph, but before they lived together, she was found with child through the Holy Spirit. Joseph, her husband, since he was a righteous man, yet unwilling to expose her to shame, decided to divorce her quietly. Such was his intention when, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream and said, Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take Mary, your wife, into your home, for it is through the Holy Spirit that this child has been conceived in her. She will bear a son, and you are to name him Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins. When Joseph awoke, he did as the angel of the Lord had commanded him and took his wife into his home. Verbum Domini. Today we celebrate the solemnity of Saint Joseph, the spouse of the Blessed Virgin Mary. And we have the scene here in Matthew's Gospel of this first dream that Joseph has. He has four dreams that direct and guide him, and you know, telling him to don't be afraid to take Mary as your wife. We see the text here begins at the end of the genealogy in Matthew's Gospel, where Jacob was the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary. Of her was born Jesus, who is called the Christ. It's emphasizing her virginal conception here, saying of her was born Jesus, who was called the Christ. It wasn't just Joseph begets Jesus, because he's not the biological father. The Holy Spirit overshadows Mary in this virginal conception. So it's what's born in her is divine, it's holy. You know, that Jesus is the Son of God. So that teaching about Mary's virginity protects the divinity of Christ, his identity as truly the Son of God. So we're told that when his mother Mary was betrothed to Joseph, but before they lived together, you know, she was found with child. So they're legally married at this betrothal, and there's a period, a gap there. Then they come together, was the tradition at the time. So in that space there, before they come together, he has the dream, and the angel instructs him, you know, do not be afraid to take Mary, your wife, into your home, for it is through the Holy Spirit that this child has been conceived in her. Do not be afraid. The angel doesn't tell him, don't be angry, because as I'm going to speak of later, he was drawing back so as not to interfere with this great mystery that he perceived was happening. Now, as we speak of it, is his annunciation that he has a call to faith here, but he doesn't suspect Mary of adultery. And this makes perfect sense to me, because we all have a sense of that, even with us sinners and fellow sinners, that, you know, this person couldn't do that. We know their character, right? And I think obviously the same is with Joseph and Mary. He is considered the patron of the universal church. It's quite a lofty title. As he protected the Holy Family, as he protected Mary, a special model and image of the church, he is the protector, the guardian, the patron of the universal church, the spiritual protector of the church. John Paul II wrote a document as him as the guardian of the Redeemer, that he protects this Holy Family. He's the legal foster father. It's spiritual. It's a spiritual fatherhood, a real fatherhood, not a biological fatherhood, but it's an authentic fatherhood that he shares in. We could speak of him as a foster father, as an adoptive father, and he has this important role to give Jesus the name Son of David. That Joseph was from the house of David and gives that title to Christ, which is a fulfillment of prophecy that the Messiah was going to come to the house of David. And Mary herself in Luke's gospel in the finding of the temple refers to Joseph as the father of Jesus. So it's not Mary, it's not merely an apparent or substitute fatherhood, but a real authentic sharing in the fatherhood and the mission of the Holy Family. And today we're emphasizing in today's solemnity that he is the spouse of Mary, the husband of Mary, the lawful and natural guardian of the head of the Holy Family. And the church is taught that he is a special model for husbands in his sanctity, in his faith, in his obedience, his courage. He had great challenges that he had to face as the father, as the protector. He's also considered the patron of the interior life. I came across a beautiful quote from Saint Bernadette. She said, if anyone cannot find a master to teach him how to pray, let him take the glorious Saint Joseph as his master, and he will not go astray. I think John of the Cross would credit Teresa of Avila as teaching him devotion to Saint Joseph and him learning and developing that devotion to him. We see that he has this profound and deep silence in the gospel, yet he conversed with angels, right? That God directed him through these dreams where the angel appears to him. He's referred to as the just man, the righteous man, this holy man. We can just sense a deep humility in him. He's such a servant. He's not drawing attention to himself. We can see in him this deep reverence for the miraculous works of God that are taking place in Mary. And he has considered as a model for all families, you know, not just husbands, but for the family themselves, that he has a true Christian marriage, though it's never consummated out of reverence for the work of the Holy Spirit and Mary's virginal body and soul. It's a true marriage. There's love, there's consent, there's offspring in Jesus. So those goods of marriage are there. But it is this beautiful, even though it's unusual, it's this beautiful model for all Christian families. As I mentioned, we see, as scholars have pointed out, there's two annunciations involved here. We have Mary's annunciation, where she's asked to believe in this virginal conception, that the Holy Spirit will overshadow her. And Joseph is asked to share in her faith, in this virginal conception in her. And there's many, they've analyzed these annunciation scenes. There's a lot of parallels. It's beautiful to see that in the scriptures. And he gives what Paul talks about as this obedience of faith. Mary gives her fiat, let it be done to me according to thy word. And St. Joseph, we're just told simply that, that first dream to take Mary as his wife, he woke up and did what the angel told him to do. That's simple. We can see this quickness to believe, this readiness to serve, this submission to God. And this is at the heart of what it means to be a just man. And again, the angel doesn't tell him, don't be angry. It's don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. He doesn't suspect her of adultery. He draws back so as not to interfere with this mystery that's taking place before him. John Paul II, the saints are on different interpretations of this passage. What was his reaction and what did he think? But John Paul II wrote beautifully about this in his document on Joseph. And he is a just man, but is he bypassing the law? The law permits this stoning for adultery. He decides to divorce her quietly. He's not going to interfere with this mystery. He considered himself unworthy. But it's not a bypassing of the law if God's doing this, if it's God's work in her. You know, obviously, it's not bypassing the law not to stone her. He felt unworthy to approach this mystery taking place in her. You know, Elizabeth herself witnesses to this faith as well, because she exclaims, "How should the mother of my Lord come to me?" She perceived what was going on in Mary. So certainly, Saint Joseph, who's entrusted with the guardianship of the Holy Family, what loftier role could you possibly have in this life? Certainly he would have that same faith. Saint Bernard of Clairvaux would write, Doctor of the Church, why did he wish to leave her? He saw with sacred astonishment that she bore a special quality of the divine presence and will not be able to understand this mystery. He wished to leave her. But the instruction of the angel in the dream, he took her into his own home. When I think about his life, you know, these four dreams that he had where the angel guides him, the second is to the flight into Egypt when Herod was trying to take the life of the child, and then instructed to return, and then instructed not to settle in Judea, but to go to Galilee. He settles in Nazareth. You know, he struggles, I would think, with decisions that are not easy to make. You're entrusted with protecting the Holy Family. It's on your shoulders. Those are things to grapple with. And I think we can all relate to the difficulties of making decisions in our lives that are in accordance with God's will. So he's a model of that. Being a just man, you know, it means that technically the virtue that we give others their due. We give God his due. This submission, this practice of religion, to have right relations with all, our brothers and sisters, and also with the Lord himself. versus this, it's all about me attitude. You know, we think of the story of Cain and Abel. You know, am I my brother's keeper, right after he kills Abel? That yes, in a sense, we are. We owe people respect, their due, a sharing of our life with theirs. And he is, of course, a model of this. And this, as I said, includes the virtue of religion, giving God what is owed to God. So we see this great faith and obedience in him, this seeking of God's will, this submission to God. Again, his silence, I think, speaks of this pondering heart, seeking God's will, how to serve God. You can just feel that strength when you read these texts in the gospel. He, in his silence, speaks of the primacy of the interior life. That to do these great things, he doesn't speak any words in the gospel. He has this silence. To do these great things, to exercise this great faith, his silence speaks of his being filled with contemplation, where he receives strength and direction to obey, to make these decisions. Even, you know, to renounce the conjugal love by rights, you know, that through marriage that he has, his virginal love for the Holy Family takes strength. You know, he's following the Lord's will in that. John Paul II would write that his love as a man was also given a new birth by the Holy Spirit. I love that as the Holy Spirit overshadowed Mary, she gave birth to Christ. His love as a man was given new birth by the Holy Spirit. So he is a model for all of us of this great faith, of this submission to God's will, of seeking that will in all things.